I'm Josh Schwartz.
And I'm William Illingworth.
Hosts of the High Tech Podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now.
Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others.
Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
What exactly do you want the students to learn? And how deeply are they expected to understand and use their learning?
Welcome to the Leader of Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and this is where I help educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. Because my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can have a tremendous impact on your organization. I chat with inspiring guests who are truly making an impact as instructional leaders. Whether this is your first time listening or you've come back for more, I hope you've subscribed to this show on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss any of the great episodes, topics, or guests. Anyway, I'm so glad you've tuned in. Now let's get started. Hello, Leader of Learning, and welcome to episode 134. If you're coming back because you subscribe, thank you so much for joining us again. If this is the first time you're listening, I hope you enjoy the content, and I hope you'll consider subscribing on whatever podcast app you prefer to listen on. In this episode, I have a great guest and a great topic. You know, recently, I actually changed the focus a little bit of this podcast and everything that I do as the Leader of Learning brand. And I changed the tagline to be helping educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. And in this episode, and with my guest, Eric Francis, we're going to be delving deeply into instruction and how to make an impact as a leader on the quality of the instruction happening in our classrooms using things like depth of knowledge. So I can't wait for you to listen. I was very excited to talk to Eric, and I know you're going to get a lot of value out of this episode. So coming up is my interview with Eric Francis. Welcome back, Leader of Learning. Another amazing and exciting guest in this episode, Eric Francis. I like to call him Maverick. You'll probably learn why a little bit later in the episode. Eric is an international author, educator, presenter with lots of experience. He's the author of a new book, Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, a Method and Model for Deeper Teaching and Learning. We're going to talk a lot about that one. He's also, and I love this, and I love that you put this in your bio here, Eric, so I'm going to read it so you don't have to. I don't know, people feel uncomfortable doing this sometimes, but he's ranked as one of the world's top 30 education professionals by the research organization Global Gurus. How cool is it that you can call yourself a top 30 global guru? Well, maybe that's the organization, but if I were you, I'd call myself a global guru. I think that's awesome. But anyway, Eric, welcome to the show. And if there's anything I missed, please provide that information, introduce yourself a little better, who you are, where you are, what you do.
No, I think you did great, man. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for introducing me. You know, it's funny that thing, global guru, like you never ever kind of want to buy your own press or believe your own hype. You know, until I can go to Starbucks and be like Norm from Cheers, where they'll go like, you know, Eric, okay, yeah, here's my Starbucks drink or whatever, and then give it to me for free, then I know I really have arrived. You know what I'm saying? So, but no, it's cool. I mean, it's been a few years I've been named to that list. You know, it fluctuates. Like 1 year I was number 12, another year I was like number 3. Every time I feel like I'm on that list, it's like basically, you know, it's funny because there's a lot of big names on it. And the first years when I was on it, it was like, oh, wow, there's so-and-so, there's so-and-so, there's so-and-so. Who's that? That's when I felt like when they came to me, I felt like, you know, I was like Ant-Man on the Avengers, if you know what I mean. But it's cool. And a lot of good colleagues and friends of mine have really also gotten on it. Rick Jeter got really high this year. He got like number 6. And Tom Herrick, who's an amazing guy, has been like a mentor to me and a great friend. He's like number 10. Rachel Mann's on there. A lot of great educators. So, I mean, it's an honor, but like, I don't want to like walk around like, because the minute you start believing in your own press and believing your own hype, I think that's kind of, it's where you kind of lose your eye at a tiger like Rocky did, you know what I mean? Where you start believing, you know, you're something else or something more than you really are. So yeah.
Well, listen, I want to dive right in. I feel like in a lot of ways, and I know we don't know each other too well, but we've been connected for a while, maybe met briefly in person once. I think of you as kind of a man on the on a mission. From what I see of you in terms of what you're sharing, your content, your books, and the most recent one is really diving into and I guess demystifying depth of knowledge in a lot of ways, right? So let's just dive right in. Let's talk about that. Correct me if I'm wrong. I understand depth of knowledge and the way I've been trained on it and supporting other teachers in it is it's akin to like Bloom's taxonomy and higher order thinking in terms of the hierarchy, if you will, the levels at which you can engage students and bring that thinking and learning out of them. If I got that wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, and you know, explain it and what is what's your take on it and how do you tackle that in the book, really?
Well, the hard thing is that for the last 10 years, most of what that's been presented and provided about depth of knowledge has been completely inaccurate or inconsistent with its original intent and purpose. You know, we've been treating it like this academic concept and framework and model, and you said taxonomy, and it's not. When Norman Webb first developed, Dr. Norman Webb first developed depth of knowledge, it was a criterion for alignment studies. And they're called levels, but they're really not levels, they're actually categories. So the way you use depth of knowledge and the DOK levels is that it's almost like a rating scale. So you would determine the depth of knowledge demanded by your academic standards, and you would code it a 1, 2, 3, or 4. And then you would determine the depth of knowledge demanded by the activities or assessments that address that standard, and then you would code it a 1, 2, 3, or 4, and then compare it against each other to determine a degree of alignment. So it never was a taxonomy, and it's still not. And I made sure in my book to make sure that I didn't represent it as a taxonomy. When the Common Core came out, and Karen Hess, a lot of it was rooted on Dr. Karen Hess's cognitive rigor, depth of knowledge became a measure for cognitive rigor along with Bloom's taxonomy. So she superimposed into matrix form. So the way you measure the cognitive rigor of an academic standard curricular activity or test item is, first, you look at the verb and see where it's located in Bloom's. If you're using Bloom's as your cognitive framework, or Solo, or Marzano's, or Fink's taxonomy of significant learning, then you look at the depth of knowledge demanded, and that's what the columns would be. And Karen Hess was really the one who came up with the whole thing about how depth of knowledge is about what comes after the verb. You probably heard that, and that's what we were told. The problem with it is that depth of knowledge was originally, again, designed to be an alignment study, a criterion for alignment studies. And Florida was one of the first states that did alignment studies with depth of knowledge, not Bloom's, which is what's traditionally been done. So a teacher in Florida uploaded the DOK wheel to the internet and said, this is depth of knowledge. And not many people know this, and Karen has talked about it briefly in her book, is that the DOK wheel is actually derived. I'm going to show this to you guys and talk about this. This is the Bloom's Hot Wheel that is in Barbara Clark's Growing Up Gifted. It was a book that was published in the late 80s, and it's been had multiple editions revised. But if you look at that wheel, if you notice it, it has 5 spokes and it's full of verbs. And the DOK wheel has 4 spokes. So if you ever thought that that the DOK wheel was just another way to do Bloom's, you know, you're absolutely correct. I'm not going to disagree with you. But it's not depth of knowledge. Because what depth of knowledge is, it's not about the complexity of cognition. It's about the complexity of the content students must learn and the context or conditions and criteria in which students must understand and use their learning. So one of the things I talk about is that it's the next step in unpacking, unwrapping the standards. And probably your audience right now, or maybe you right now, are rolling your eyes and sighing because, great, we're going to go circle verbs and underline nouns. That's the great Larry Ainsworth method. But there's another thing he talks about in terms of context, and that's what depth of knowledge does. With depth of knowledge, when you deconstruct for depth of knowledge, you identify the verb, the first verb, and then you put it aside, because that's Bloom's. Now you got to ask yourself, what exactly are students thinking about or learning. That's the noun or noun phrase that names the content. So if I said, the standard said, multiply multi-digit numbers fluently using the standard algorithm, okay? So the verb is multiply. First verb, put it aside. What exactly am I multiplying? Numbers. How deeply do I have to multiply those numbers? Well, they need to be multi-digit, and I need to use the standard algorithm, and I need to do this fluently. That's what determines the depth of knowledge demanded. That's what it means by looking beyond the verb. So you can still unpack and unwrap your standards, but now you're going to be able to, with depth of knowledge, clarify what exactly is it that students have to learn, how deeply do students have to learn, and when it comes to standards-based learning, how many objectives must they achieve to basically demonstrate proficiency according to that standard?
You know, I want to ask you a similar question, but from a different angle, so to speak, because I think in general, in terms of really understanding and applying these concepts here, instructionally speaking, are, it would feel naturally like it's the responsibility of the teacher. I fairly recently, and I want to point this out because this is where I'm going with this question. I fairly recently, you could see it above us here, I changed kind of the tagline of my mission and the mission of the show, which is helping educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. So let's kind of step out of the traditional classroom teacher role for a second. Like, what would a current or aspiring school leader really want to know, not just about depth of knowledge, but maybe how to clarify and push it among the instructional staff at their school?
Well, the first thing is it needs to be communicated that it's not another way to do Bloom's. It's not something extra. I look at depth of knowledge actually as something supplemental or supporting. It's funny, at one point I wanted to call the book Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge, I wanted to call it The Missing Link, because I think depth of knowledge is the missing link. And I think once you really understand the concept with it, and you ask yourself two questions, what exactly, how deeply? Those are the two questions that an instructional leader needs to ask. So you ask them, what exactly do you want the students to learn? And how deeply are they expected to understand and use their learning? But even from a leadership standpoint, let's talk about how DOK, and this is what I talk about in the book, can supplement and support PLCs, professional learning communities. Because the book was published by Solution Tree, and as we all know, Solution Tree, one of the big initiatives of Solution Tree, along with assessment, is professional learning communities. So I showed how DOK can strengthen and support the responses to the four PLC questions by the DeFour. So what is it we want students to learn? That's the DOK level of the standard. How do we know if students are learning? We assess to and at the DOK level of the standard. See, that's the thing, we're not only supposed to assess at the DOK level of the standard, we're supposed to assess over a range of DOK levels leading to it. What if they struggle to learn? We tier our instruction to the DOK level where students are, where they can be successful, and build upon their strengths so they can rise to reach and go beyond that DOK level, the standard, what I call the DOK bar. That actually turns depth of knowledge into a multi-tiered system of support, an MTS or an RTI model. And it's really interesting because when I show this to people, they go, so wait a minute, we usually look at tiering instruction based upon a deficit model where you're saying, well, what is it the students don't know and understand? But if we do it more of a strengths finder and a strengths builder, now it's, can you do this? No. Can you do this? No. Can you do this? Yes. Okay, good. Let's start there. So that answers the third question. What do we do if students already learned it or they demonstrate proficiency? Then we always need to take it to the next DOK level. So when it comes to instructional leadership, if we're going to be, not do, be PLCs, we got to make sure we have that language out there. And we're also going
You mean it's not just a meeting that we show up to, everyone?
No. It's not just a glorified staff meeting, you know? But if we are going to be PLCs and we're going to implement multi-tiered system supports, not just for intervention, but also for enrichment, also for extension, then depth of knowledge will help us with our strategic planning. It will help us with our instructional planning and also our instructional delivery. It really can help clarify and make it very, very concrete and specific. What do we need to do to address assess and also augment learning.
I love something you said a few minutes ago, and you just kind of touched on it again. You used the word assess. A few minutes ago, you mentioned essentially tiering. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially tiering your assessments so that you're assessing different levels of depth of knowledge. That's tough to say. Say that five times fast. So I'm thinking too that as instructional leaders, we want to make sure that we are supporting our teachers in understanding that assessing students, both formatively and summatively, right, is done at all different levels. And I think that's a pretty big shift in people's minds when it comes to, I'll use the term differentiation, or like you mentioned, multi-tiered or RTI. I don't know that we necessarily put that much thought into doing that in assessments, or at least not as much as we do in instruction.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, another thing I think we need to look at, and this is how DOK can also make that shift. I think we have to look at what we are saying in the language we're using. And this is something I'm having a conversation with a lot of schools and a lot of school leaders, is that they say the test, okay? A test is not the same thing as an assessment. Okay. Test tells me this is what you know and understand can do on this day. Okay. Test has some sort of final, you know, culmination of an evaluation of things. But an assessment tells me where the kids are and where do we go next? What needs to happen next based upon students' performance and progress? And the sad thing is, and the reality of it is, and not a lot of people want to recognize and realize this, but when the tests don't have teeth, okay, or we call the tests don't have teeth, the kids have figured it out. They're throwing it. You know, my own daughter told me about it, that basically, you know, they didn't take it seriously. Why? Because the kids know they're going to the next grade level, okay? The pressure's not on them. They're not going to get held back. You know, we're not going to retain them. The worst thing that they realize is going to happen to them, they're going to get extended learning time through whatever intervention program they have, okay? But if you make it and you communicate to the kids that this is telling us whether you're ready to go further or whether we need more time to go and address things where there's some gaps, there seems to be some things that basically the mindset will change. I just had this with a school where the school leader said the kids all threw the test, and we realized they threw the test because they didn't like the teacher. Okay. And they know that the teacher will get in trouble if the kids will, or quote trouble, you know, if they don't do well on the test. But we then said, this is not a test, this is an assessment. And they said, what's the difference? And I said, well, the test tells us what you know and understand and can do, but the assessment tells me whether you're ready to go further or whether you're ready to go beyond the standards, which is what designates the criteria for setting proficiency. And we said to the kids, well, based upon what you guys did on the assessment, you guys are not ready for the next step. We got to make sure that, you know, we have the foundation and the functional understanding and the, you know, the conceptual and procedural understanding before we can start going further with it. And they go, well, wait, let's take it again. And they took it again. Miraculously, their scores went up. So that's the thing. And I think that's, you know, when we talk about how we need to shift as a response to how the system and profession of education has changed, I think we really need to look at our instructional delivery and how we're doing things and really question, what are we doing and how are we using what we're doing and what are we depending upon? I mean, that's a big thing. A lot of teachers, they really depend upon the curriculum or the program that the teachers, you know, that the school has purchased for them. Well, that's like giving the teachers guitar, Eddie Van Halen's guitar, and say, I'm giving you Eddie Van Halen's guitar so you and all your students can now play Eruption. No, you got to teach the kids how to be a guitarist. And that's the thing about teachers. We're artists, and we need to use our creativity to figure out how we can basically address the standard and use the curriculum as our instrument or tool to get these kids to become their own artists.
I really love how you said that. That was amazing. You know, I referenced this in a fairly recent podcast episode as well. I used to have he was really an outside consultant, external expert that would come in and help us, but he was more like an instructional coach. And he always used to call it like your teacher magic, as you just explained, like being an artist or almost a magician, right? You bring something to the table that's uniquely yours, and you have that special way of delivering it and creating and building relationships with kids. I love how you said that. One of the things that I'm thinking as you're talking, and it's maybe a nice segue to talk about some of your other work too, is I know that you had this book. Now that's a great question, right? And I'm thinking that although you sort of wrote them maybe out of order, I don't know, but I'm guessing that questioning and really good, solid questioning and discussion techniques are also a really great way of doing. You like how I did this? It's also a really great way of doing this as well, right? Where you are building up to a higher questioning technique, and you're really, dare I use the word, scaffolding, right? And you're varying your questions, the level of questions, and I think that could be a really great way of tackling some of this stuff when it comes to DOK.
And that's part of it, because, you know, the thing about when I wrote Now That's a Good Question back in 2016, it was based on a process. I'm a questioner. I'm what you call a natural skeptic. I'm still that 2 or 3 year old who's always asking why. I don't settle for answers, you know. I want to know why that's the answer. I want to know what if. I want to know what else, which is the essential questions I use to talk about the different DOK levels. But the interesting thing, and it's interesting you're talking about that, because I'm actually writing another questioning and inquiry book. I just got approved to contract approved for Solution Tree. And it's going to go into about questioning and inquiry. And we've been talking about questioning and inquiry, and we have all these different ideas about questioning and inquiry. But what's interesting is that much like levels of thinking, we put a value judgment on questions. It's not, you know, what is the question you're asking? It's like Eric Clapton sings, it's in the way that you use the question. So I can say to you, I can start it off as my hook, you know, to pique your curiosity. I can say, what is 2 plus 2? And you say 4. And then I say, what do you mean? Because the real question I'm trying to get to is, how can addition be used to find the sum of two numbers? I'm going to give you 2 numbers, 2 plus 2. You give me 2 numbers. Okay, 5 and 3. Okay, how can addition be used to find the sum of those two numbers? What if I reverse those numbers, not 5 and 3, but 3 and 5? What would happen? So that's what in terms of questioning with that. And really, it's stopping putting pressure on yourself. Like, I have to ask this really profound question. No, okay, you got to get to that question. And that's a lost art and skill. And there's research that shows that children between the age of 2 and 5 will ask 300, 400 questions a day. And pretty much all to their mother, because they go to a trusted adult. But when they go to school, the questioning interaction between adults and children change, because now it's the teacher who's asking the question. And the teacher's not asking the question more often to activate or advance learning. They're asking the question to assess and affirm learning. And teachers use the questions as feedback to say, okay, are we ready to go on to the next level? So we really got to tap back into, when it comes to questioning, you know, that natural innate curiosity and interest we have to, you know, enhance our knowledge, enhance our understanding, enhance our awareness, enhance our expertise, and really try to figure out how can we get people, you know, curious and interested to learn. I mean, again, if I say to you, who's the first president, and you tell me George Washington, I'm going to follow up and say, what do you mean? And you're going to look at me shocked, but I got you. And then I say to teachers, I say, is that a good question? They go, no. I said, why? And they go, it's basic recall. And I said, according to what? And they said, according to history. And I go, whose history? And they said, well, you can Google it. Well, if you Google it, you're going to find information about a guy named John Hanson, who was the first president appointed under the Articles of Confederation. And in fact, there were 8 who served an annual term before Washington. That's not addressed in any history books or any curriculum. But what's interesting is one of the standards say, understand how the failures of the Articles of Federation led to the writing of the United States Constitution. This is one of the failures, is that we had a president who had no executive power. So you're focusing on that. So again, you really need to think about what is your intent of your questions. If you're just assessing learning, you know, that's one thing. But if you're trying to activate and advance learning and you take the pressure off answering and saying, okay, you got to go and acquire the information. This is what our focus is going to be. This is going to be our instructional focus, but it's also going to serve as our assessment. And it could also personalize learning if I put how could you in front of an objective. That's really where you get to the heart of the questioning. That's where the critical thinking comes from. And the rigor will come from students not so much comprehending, but communicating. That's the rigor. Can you communicate your knowledge and thinking and learning not only correctly, but also clearly and comprehensively?
I mean, it's amazing stuff. To be honest, this is probably one of the more in-depth conversations that I've had on this show about instruction, and I kind of geek out about this stuff. So I hope my listeners are really getting a lot of value out of this conversation. I know that they can. You know, in terms of, like I said before, this new tagline that I'm running with, because I love it, helping educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. I like to say at the end of every podcast episode, no matter who you are or where you are, you're a leader of learning. So let's assume that instructional leader can go for a variety of titles and roles in schools and districts. As an instructional leader, what evidence, like how do I know that teachers are really stepping up their game when it comes to whether it's questioning and discussion or you know, assessing students better? Like what are some of those things that, you know, as we wrap up, let's say, what are some things that maybe we can leave our instructional leaders with in terms of like, look, maybe your teachers aren't quite where they need to be yet. What are we looking for? How do we know?
Who's doing most of the action and discussion in the classroom? That's the big thing. What does that experience feel like? You know, who's the star of the show? That's what I like to ask. Who's the star of the show? And the thing I talk about with DOK is that I compare it to television shows, where a DOK one is like a game show. So the teacher is essentially like a game show host. And if it's funny, if you look at a game show set and how a game show runs, it's very much like traditional direct instruction, the traditional classroom. The game show host stands at a podium, so does the teacher. The game show host provides the information, if you're Alex Trebek, in the form of a clue, and the kids have to answer who, what, where, and when. Or if you are on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you got a multiple choice question. You just have to basically recall. At a DOK 2, I'd like to say that the student becomes the teacher. It's really interesting because as instructional leaders, when we go do classroom observations, when we're going in there asking the kids, so what are you doing there? So how do you do this? Why did you do it that way? We're asking DOK 2 questions as an instructional leader because we want them to tell us. We want the students to become the teacher. They become the star of the show. The teacher should be like a director or producer of an instructional video or a director or producer of The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross or 30 Minute Meals with Rachel Ray. And they go, determine the central idea and theme of Charlie and the Chalk Effect by Roald Dahl and analyze development over the course of text. And action. Now the kid's on. And you can have the kids communicate it. You can have the kids go on their phones and do a Flipgrid or YouTube and explain it. That's a DOK 2. With a 3, it's more of, are you having the kids do an active and engaging experience? Did you set a goal or an expectation for them and give them a challenge or like a reality skills-based show like Top Chef or Lego Masters? You know, I want you to build a bridge out of Legos and I want it to support great weight. Now, how could you use your knowledge and skills to do that? Or I want you to make a taco bar. And it's funny because this is actually a training I give administrators. I actually say that let's make a DOK. And I show them clips from these shows. And I said, if you walked into a classroom, why would you say that's a DOK one? If you walked in this classroom, if you were in Bob Ross's show, why would you say he's doing a DOK two or Rachel Ray? Or if you're on Lego Masters, why is that a DOK 3? And then a DOK 4, that's where you get really not project-based, but authentic learning. The student now has become someone who's turned their education experience and endowments into expertise. And that's where you have more of the long-term projects. That's where you have more of the long-term investigations. In literacy classes, they're doing, you know, author studies and genre studies. The other thing I want to put out there to your listeners who are instructional leaders, don't use depth of knowledge as a means to evaluate the quality of instruction. Okay, each DLK level has its importance in the progression of students' learning. And I've seen state departments do this. Like they will come into a school and do an evaluation of how the school is doing, especially schools of improvement, and they'll walk in and go, well, I see all your kids doing their learning at a DLK one. Totally fine if that's what the experience, you know, demands, or if that's what the standard demands. And I'm going to give your listeners who are leaders something you say back to that, okay? Well, when I came in your classroom, I saw that most of your teachers are teaching at DLK one. Oh, they must be doing knowledge acquisition. That's where the kids are acquiring, developing the foundational knowledge and functional understanding. A couple of days from now, they're going to do knowledge application. That's a DLK two. So we're going to give them problems and they can demonstrate and communicate how they did that. Probably next week, they're going to do a DLK three. That's where we're going to give them this experience. And they're going to be in a seminar where they have a dialogue, debate, or discussion, or they're going to be proofing in math or doing scientific inquiry. And if the DLK four, that's going to be an authentic learning experience where our kids take what they've learned and use it in their own unique way. How about you come back at the end of the month to go evaluate my school and tell me, you know, how my teachers are teaching. Don't let anybody judge you based upon the DLK level, but coach them. Say, I notice you're teaching at DLK one. The kids are just answering correctly. How can we get the kids to justify whether those answers are correct or incorrect? What if you gave them the answer and said, tell me why that's correct or incorrect, or you asked a hypothetical question, what if? That's the way. We need to use depth of knowledge, not as an evaluative tool, but more so as a coaching guide. And that's why I say it's a method and model for deeper teaching and learning. Four different ways you can understand and use depth of knowledge. What is the standard demand? Where are the students in that progression of learning and pathway to proficiency? And how can we support those students to rise to reach and go beyond a DLK level, that standard?
That's such a great answer. And actually, it kind of covered the final real question that I wanted to ask you too, which was basically like, how often should we expect teachers to be at those higher levels or, you know, DLK four? And you kind of alluded to it. I'm glad you did. And it's like, look, you can't live there all the time, and you shouldn't feel the pressure, or anyone shouldn't have that expectation, right, to put that pressure on teachers, because naturally, in terms of student learning, like, they have to get the basics. And that's why this is a conversation for another time, another episode, but like, that's why direct instruction is still really important. You know, as much as we want to be those guides on the side, it's really valuable, and research has proven it time and time again, but it can't happen all the time, or, you know, it can't happen maybe for the 50 minutes that you have students in front of you every single time. So I get it. I love how you put that, but it makes a lot of sense to me. Again, I think this has been one of the more in-depth instructional conversations I've had, and I love it. And I know my listeners are really getting a lot out of it. Eric, as we wrap up, I want to thank you so much for your time. By the way, I alluded to this earlier. I like thinking of Eric as Maverick, because that's his handle on all the social medias. And I think, right, isn't that in your business? Like Maverick EDU is even your...
My business is called Maverick Education, but I spell it M-A-V-E-R-I-K, no C in Maverick. It's a play on the names of my daughters, Madison, Avery, and mine. And I'm also a child of the 80s, and I say this to everybody, so guess what my favorite movie is?
You know, Top Gun. Yep.
You got it. And, you know, and I also like to joke around and say, I've said this a lot, that, you know, that's the thing that really got me in this pandemic. I've been waiting 36 years for that sequel, you know, and then it got just, but I got hope for it because, you know, if it's a bad movie, I don't know if you noticed this lately, but if it's a movie that's not going to do well, the studios kind of put it on the streamers. That's why Warner Brothers movies are all on HBO Max, because they were horrible, you know, and Paramount, which is coming out with Top Gun 2, they will put it on Amazon Prime. Like Coming to America 2 was horrible. So that's why they put it on Amazon Prime. But they're holding off on Top Gun 2, so I have some hopes it's good. And, you know, that could be even an interesting conversation about how the education system needs to change, because, you know, industry and systems and professions were completely transformed by this pandemic. And this is the perfect time to reboot, and they're all rebooting. And, you know, especially the film industry, that never ever wanted to just release to streaming. They wanted to put it in the theaters, and they've really changed their dynamic. And that might be something, you know, you want to talk about at a time, is that, you know, as a system, there's some things we don't feel comfortable shifting towards, but this is the opportunity to make it. And a lot of times we feel uncomfortable shifting towards it because it's uncomfortable for us, it's change. But what if we can make that shift and really look at, okay, we live in this world where we're standards-based learning. How can we live in this world? How can we not say it is what it is with these assessments that come every year, but it is what we make it by making shifts towards standards-based grading, by looking at standards not as this is what I need to test, but okay, this is the finish line for learning and this is what they've decided. Now, how can I get the kids to cross that finish line and go beyond it? So really, really shifting how we're doing things. I really, you know, that's my hope for education. Maybe some other time we can have a conversation about that.
I would love it. And I will kind of tease out even the next episode that's coming after this one. I'm going to have a great guest on, Stephanie Howell. And we plan to talk all about blended learning, which as a digital learning coach myself, I really tout as one of those ways to, quote unquote, like we just said, reboot education post-pandemic. It's not about just using traditional or non-traditional or tech and non-tech. It's got to be a blend of everything. So that's a little teaser for the next episode after this one. But before we go in this episode, Eric, first of all, thank you so much for your time. Please go ahead and let the listeners know where they can find you and all your books and everything to you know, learn from you and learn with you.
Sure. You can go to my website, Maverick, M-A-V-E-R-I-K, education.com. Connect with me on Twitter at Maverick, M-A-V-E-R-I-K, E-D-U-1-2. Deconstructing Depth of Knowledge is published by Solution Tree, and they have a very simple URL address you can go to. It says www.solutiontree.com/truedok. That's the webpage, and there's a lot of free resources there you can use, and also a white paper I wrote that really summarizes the points. And if you're interested in Now That's a Good Question, where you learn how to turn your standards and your statements to questions, you can find that at ascd.org. So Dan, thanks so much for having me on here. You know, I've been a big fan of your show for a long time. You've had a lot of my buddies on there and had great experiences, and they've talked about how they've enjoyed talking with you. And I'm glad, you know, we've talked, and hopefully this is the start of further conversations between us.
Definitely. I really think it will be. So thank you so much. And to my listeners, all the links to Eric's website and, of course, his books will be in the show notes. So if you want to go ahead and pick up copies that you haven't gotten your hands on already, that's where you can find them as well. Thank you again for your time. And I know we'll talk again soon. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this show on your favorite podcast app. If you enjoy the content covered on this show, I want to ask you to do this one thing for me. Please share it. The biggest favor you could ever do for me is to please let others know about what I am doing and how I am helping educators grow their impact as instructional leaders. I hope you can share this podcast with other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. If you're interested in leaving a positive rating and review of this show, links to do so are always in the show notes for every episode. For more information about me or this show, and to access the great content that I share, please visit my website at leaderoflearning.com. That's where you can find my online courses, YouTube channel, blog, how to connect with me on social media, and even ways that you can support the show, like donating or purchasing Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are you are a leader of learning.